I don't know how many of you had a chance to see Professor Deborah Lipstadt's editorial in the New York Times about anti-Semitism in Europe. But she began with the old Jewish joke about the telegram that arrives that says, it's a Jewish telegram. So it says, start worrying, news to follow. And that idea that Jews are just used to worrying, or as Abba Eban put it, we like our clouds without silver linings, that's not only rooted very much in the Jewish soul, but in the human soul. And sometimes you think the one thing that people don't want to hear, really deeply don't want to hear, cannot hear, do not believe, is good news. You know, and I know, that if I was about to give a sermon about anti-Semitism in Europe, you would pay attention. Because it's serious and worrying. And there is something about fear that grips us. The other day, because a congregant was going to be on the local news, I watched for the first time in years the local news. And it was almost laughable. It was a string of bad things that happened locally. Some of them were more bad, some of them were less bad, but what they all had in common was in some way it could make you feel worse about the world. And I realized that that wasn't a function of the news, it was a function of human nature. The end of the Torah, Devarim, Deuteronomy, right before the Jews go into the land of Egypt, what we read this morning is that God sends before us a blessing and a curse. And we know that the curse commands our attention more than the blessing. But actually, interestingly enough, someone counted up, this is what Jews do, the word ahava, ahav, appears twice in Exodus, twice in Leviticus, not at all in Numbers, and 23 times in Devarim, in Deuteronomy. The word joy, like simcha, appears once in Genesis, once in Exodus, once in Leviticus, once in Numbers, and 12 times in Deuteronomy. In other words, as the Jews are about to come into the land, they need to learn about love and joy. So this morning I'm here to bring you some good news, which is that despite appearances, the world is in better shape in most ways than it has ever been. Ever. There were a whole series of books that came out over the past several years that show if you track your chances of dying a violent death from prehistoric times to today, there is a steady, consistent decline, even given the wars of the 20th century. Now, people resist it. They don't want to believe it. And one of the reasons you don't is because some of the greatest catastrophes of history, we don't even know about, if you plot them on a chart. Wars that killed millions of people in China, for example, in the Middle Ages or in ancient times, have been wiped off our collective memories. Tribes that have been completely wiped out in genocides, we don't remember. What life was like in the Middle Ages is not known to us. That the world is horrified by a beheading is appropriate, but you know what? If this were 300 years ago, no one would be horrified. Another beheading. We go to the Tower of London when we go to England and we see the terrible things that were done to the people in the tower, and we forget that no one would do that today in the Western world. And when we see the horrible things that ISIS is doing, we realize what they're doing is what people did 500 years ago. They are, quite literally, medieval. But the reason we call them medieval is because the rest of the world is not medieval. Think of the way women live now and the way women lived 600, 700, 800 years ago or in the time of the Bible. The difference is astonishing. Now, I could talk much more about this, but I want to just focus on two things, one quickly and then one a little less quickly. This is from one of the books, the best one probably, on the decline of violence, which is Steven Pinker's The Better Angels of Our Nature. And he talks about the fact that we have this tremendous fear of terrorism, as obviously we should. He says, but it's a little known fact that most terrorist groups fail and all of them die. Lest this seem hard to believe, reflect on the world around you. Israel continues to exist. Northern Ireland is still part of the United Kingdom and Kashmir is part of India. There are no sovereign states in Kurdistan, Palestine, Quebec, Puerto Rico, Chechnya, Corsica, Tamil, Elam, or Basque country. The Philippines, Algeria, Egypt, and Uzbekistan are not Islamic theocracies, and Japan, the United States, Europe, and Latin America have not become religious, Marxist, anarchist, or New Age utopias. In other words, all those terrorist efforts have thus far failed. It's almost as if I were to give you a headline: SARS, hantavirus, and bird flu killed no one this year. But do you remember the panics over all of them? So one of the things we have to get used to is the idea that sometimes there really is good news. And had you told our great-great-grandparents that we would live in comfort and wealth, and there would be a state of Israel, they would have said, don't be ridiculous. That's not Jewish life. But all too often, instead of celebrating that, we only talk about how terrible things are. And why do I bring this up this morning? I hear you cry. What's so good about this morning? It's a lunch that I had this week that made me think about this. And I'm still thinking about it. You may hear more about it on the high holidays. I don't know. I'm just warning you. Don't be surprised if you hear more. But I was asked to this lunch, and I literally did not know why. I had on my calendar, sometimes, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, sometimes I look on my calendar and I'm surprised that things are on there. I don't know how they got there. And in the morning I looked and it said, you are to have lunch with the Consul General of Azerbaijan. I didn't know why. I swear, I had no idea. But I went to La Gondola, which is one of our fine kosher restaurants. And there was the Consul General of Israel, our own David Siegel, the Consul General of Azerbaijan, and about 10 other rabbis. And I thought, okay, there's some point to this lunch. I don't know what. And then I started to hear about Azerbaijan, a Muslim country, about 60% Sunni, 40% Shia, with a small population of Jews, a small population of Kurds, that is pro-Israel. I mean, really pro-Israel. Where Shimon Peres visited a few years ago. Now, when was the last time Shimon Peres paid a state visit to a Muslim country? And there are pictures of him and the president with an Israeli flag and an Azerbaijani flag, and one of the big telecommunication companies in Azerbaijan is Israeli. And they have full diplomatic relations. And the Azerbaijani consul general sent his kids to a Jewish gan here in Los Angeles and talked about how the Jewish community in Azerbaijan would be very grateful if the Los Angeles Jewish community could sponsor, and he put it in these words, a safer Torah to give them. And I thought to myself, what is wrong with us? How is it that I could spend so many years in the heart of the Jewish community and never hear about Azerbaijan? I know some of you do. But why don't we know? And I realize why we don't know about Azerbaijan, because it's good news. So I've talked about Iran, I don't know how many times, and nuclearization from this bima, but I've never mentioned a Muslim country that likes us. And I thought, there's something wrong with that. And sometimes, we have to learn how to take yes for an answer. It's a beautiful thing when you realize that throughout the world there really are people of goodwill and decency and kindness, and you know that it doesn't have the same emotional impact on us as when people are cruel or evil. But the great trick is to oppose evil just as strongly, to take it just as seriously, and yet to realize that when we make progress, we have to pay attention to it, because otherwise we'll start to think that all of our efforts are futile. And they're not. They're really not. We shouldn't despair of making our case, because there are people who will listen. Not only that, but then we tend to exaggerate the evils that occur. And we think things are over and done with and despair, when in fact, it is still possible to make differences. In the same way that people overestimate, if you ask almost any non-Jew how many Jews are there in the world, they give us many, many, many more than we have. I went around this week asking people what percentage of Britain, of the UK, is Muslim. And almost no one got it right. It's under 5%. Now, does that mean that we shouldn't pay attention to anti-Semitism in Britain and that the Muslim influence in Europe isn't important and isn't a threat and shouldn't be watched? Of course not. But it means that it actually is important to get things right and to make common cause with the people who will make common cause with us. And not to always believe that everybody hates the Jews, which I've heard so many times that it sickens me, because it invalidates all the non-Jewish people in this world who've been our friends and who've cared about us and who want to help us. I have to tell you, on my Facebook page, half of the comments about Israel that are positive are from non-Jews. And half of the comments about Israel that are negative are from Jews. So don't believe we are alone in this world. We are not alone in this world. There are people outside of our own community that care about us and care about Israel and understand increasingly, by the way, the incredible threat that is posed by the fanaticism and fundamentalism and violence and cruelty that is spreading throughout the Middle East and increasingly throughout the world. Other people see it too. We're not the only ones. So keep speaking out. Know that it makes a difference and that people do listen. And that the Jewish voice is often heard, even if we're not always heard. Another thing that came to my office this week was that there was going to be another rally for Israel in front of the federal building. And I thought, really, another rally? And then they said to me, would you speak? And I said, ah, another rally. Good idea. But I realized, you know what? Maybe someone will hear who hasn't heard before. Maybe we can make our case a little bit better. Maybe it'll make an impact. And I remembered the lunch with the consul general from Azerbaijan. And I thought, don't despair. Don't believe that everyone is against us. Instead, look to try to persuade people whose hearts are open and whose consciences are true and whose souls are good. Throughout history, you know, more than Jews sometimes think, we have made common cause with people around us who have been kind. We still do that today. There is a country of 9.5 million Muslims out there that actually stood up for Israel. I said to the Consul General, what happened with Gaza? He said, you know, there were editorials, and some of them said that Israel shouldn't have done this or Israel shouldn't have done that. He says, but there were no demonstrations in the streets, because the people of Azerbaijan, we think of Jews as our friends. So, I think of them as my friend too. And I hope that you will. And that we will remember that Jews alone can't do it in this world. But that everybody of good conscience, speaking out together, can make the world a much better place, as it is better than it used to be, not only through our efforts, but through the efforts of the good people throughout the generations who understand the message of Devarim, of Deuteronomy, that ultimately God's aim is to make this a world of simcha, of joy, and of ahava, of love. Shabbat shalom.